Mr. Herman.
Poop again! Party on, dudes!
10, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Extreme close up!
Welcome into the Radcast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Steven.
I'm Matt.
And thank you for joining us once again. It's going to be another special celebration week for multiple reasons. Last week, if you listened, we talked the 30th anniversary of the Three Ninjas.
Great episode.
We had a blast talking with Jeremy Weed about it. Well, yeah, I feel like we would have done better, you know, if it was probably the two of us.
I think we would. Yeah.
And I hope agree. He hears me. Probably putting the baby down. Sorry. Yeah. It really was a blast. Yeah. It was a good time, and we were excited to do that, but not as excited as we are to do today's episode.
Ooh, it's a big one.
It is. It's a big one. It's another 30th anniversary. In 1992, mm-hmm. July 1st, 1992, A League of Their Own was released in the theaters, a movie that is one of my top 10 to this day.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk to someone who it is her... It's your favorite? I don't remember. Is that your...
You know, I think it's top five.
Top five, sure. Easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very easily top five favorite movies. A movie I could answer a Desert Island questionnaire and say, oh, what? If you could pick three movies, this would for sure be one of my movies. I can watch it anytime, any place. I don't get sick of it.
Yeah.
It's very nostalgic for me. I love it.
Yeah. And unlike last week's film, which I love... This film is in the U.S. Library of Congress for preservation in the National Film Registry archives.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. 2012?
2012, yeah.
So
we not only are celebrating its 30th anniversary, let's celebrate its 10th anniversary for being into the National Library of Congress.
I like that idea.
Yes. Mazel tov.
Yes.
So it's A League of Their Own, if you haven't heard already, and we'll get formally into this Radcast rental, a two for a Radcast rental.
Two weeks in a row.
Yep. But the most special reason that we are talking about this is the voice you just heard making her return to the show, her fourth appearance.
You almost got that.
You're almost a five timer.
Almost. Horseshoes and hand grenades.
Horseshoes and hand grenades.
That means we gotta blow up some horses next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that'll put you in the five timers club.
She blew up some horses.
Jess Weed is
the better
back
half of the Weed clan.
Yes. Jess, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
It's been a couple years.
It has been.
Last time we recorded with you was Heavyweights back in 2020.
Wow.
Pretty close to around this time 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that.
Did that outside, too. Mm-hmm.
I mean, time flies, but really time flies. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know it had been 2 years. So thank you for having me.
Of course, talking about
one of my favorite movies ever.
It's one of the movies the three of us started connected on when we first met, and that's one of the first movies we would quote ad nauseum all the time.
I couldn't think of anyone else I'd rather have unless we got like Gina Davis or something.
Unless Gina Davis could be on the show.
But we'd have you on with Gina Davis.
I'm happy to be a second to Gina Davis at this point.
Well, Gina Davis was a second to Deborah Winger. Because Deborah Winger was originally...
Right.
You're actually a third to Tom Hanks. So either Deborah or not Deborah, either Gina Davis or Tom Hanks.
You know what?
I accept.
We're acting like we wouldn't have her on if we had a celebrity.
It's true.
You know how amazing that would be?
Yeah.
Like, it's about... Like, if we had a celebrity, it would be like, oh, I can think of nobody else I'd want to celebrate this with.
Yeah.
With us kind of thing.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you.
Yeah. You should be. This is a prestigious show.
Yeah. Well, and I'm excited. I love you both. And
we go way back.
We were just discussing that we have been friends for over 9 years now.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah. And we were connected with movies. I feel like from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Our love of cinema, our love of music, movie sound scores and soundtracks, and all of those things connected us pretty instantly.
It's one of those things to where it's like, yeah, she can quote movies, and you get there, it's like, oh, no, she's good.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, the thing is, people can, you know, you can rattle stuff off like a parrot, but can you dissect a movie? And we will put your knowledge to the test
we are out-tours.
When you dissect.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Which we have full faith and confidence that you're going to bring the heat.
Yeah.
But before all that, Matt,
like a Kit Keller fastball.
Yeah, exactly.
Lay off the high ones.
I like the high ones.
Mule.
Nag. Matt, before we get into it, why don't you let everyone know where they can still
We're
find
sponsored
us.
Sponsored by Mike's Hard Lemonade, baby.
Get hard for Mike's Hard.
Yeah, that's their slogan. You can find us on Instagram. We are at The Radcast. The cast is spelled with a K. The Radcast is all one word. Mm-hmm. Don't have Twitter. Don't know if we're going to get Twitter. In the meantime, just promote on my personal Twitter.
Yeah.
Same with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Go find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all your podcast apps, wherever applicable. Please like, subscribe, follow, give us a 5-star review. Let us know how you like the show.
Tell your friends about
us. Tell your friends about us. Really helps
us out.
Tell
single ladies about us.
Please, yes.
Please.
Yes, Steven is single, and so am I.
Yeah. Steven is single, and so I am too. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So just to add on to what he said.
Anyway, but I know it's tough because this is an audio medium,
but, you know,
that's it.
Maybe if you picture us as more attractive guys, it'll help you.
Yeah.
I agree. I got big teeth like a horse.
Yeah. I got a big butt like a horse.
Yeah.
Together, we're like in the horse costume TV show.
I'm the face and you're the ass.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
This is nonsense. Can you move on, please?
Yes. Let's get formally into the movie. Like I said, it's
stupid.
I am thoroughly enjoying this.
And we are thoroughbreds.
Yeah. It's another Radcast rental.
Make it a Blockbuster night.
And now, our feature presentation.
So, Jess, I'm going to get into a little ins and outs of the movie. And we carried over a segment from Sucktastic Cinema, which unfortunately we didn't have you on.
Yeah,
we wanted to talk some Olsen Twins movies, but just didn't work out.
Schedule didn't line up.
That's okay.
Sorry.
We'll talk from Justin to Kelly on this show sometime.
There we go.
The riff, Radcast riffs.
Yeah. That'll be your 5 times.
Gimme.
Yeah. All set. Actually, that's a great idea.
Batter up.
All right. Okay. I don't have any vitriol towards it. It just as a kid, it was one of those things where I was like, I don't want to listen to this.
For all you listeners out there, we are to catch you up. Steven said he does not like this portion of the movie where they're all in the locker room singing their song. And that's because Steven didn't grow up playing slow pitch softball or fast pitch, rather, like I did.
Yeah, it's true. I played fastball baseball off of a tee.
Yeah, but I don't get it. You spent plenty of time in girls' locker rooms.
Hey, now.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. Please. They gave me permission to drill those holes. You can't say any different.
That was you?
Yes.
It was under the guise of repairs. You didn't use it for that. What you got permission for.
Yes, exactly.
None of this actually happened.
I'm not a pervert. I'm just looking for Turbo Man dolls.
That's what you told when the cops arrested you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What do I need the doll for? I got the real Turbo Man at home.
We're not doing Jingle All the Way, but
which, much like this movie, I sob at the end of.
That's true.
My kids didn't like Jingle All the Way. My oldest, midway through, was like, so basically this is a movie about a guy who's not really a good dad running all over trying to find a doll for his kid. And I mean, Jeremy and I just sat there and looked at each other kind of.
I mean, you're right.
Yes, a very astute assessment.
It's just kind of a negative Nancy of a movie, and you don't realize it until... Yeah. I don't know, maybe you watch it with your kids, and they just kind of looked at me like, this is not great.
Interesting. So they went to bed early that night, right?
They did.
No food.
No, we forced them to stick it out. We said, we're in this.
You pry their eyes open like in Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, exactly.
You make them watch it.
Yep.
That's right.
Some sick world we live in. Sick people.
Dasha Dancer, Prince of Vixen, Comic Cupid, Donna Blitzen.
Did I win? We're not talking about Jingle All the Way. We did that already.
That's probably going to happen several more times.
Yeah. I am not really fond of that part of A League of Their Own.
I'm surprised.
Can I hear why? I think it's just, it may have been one of those things to where, as a kid, and we'll get into like some of the ins and outs of the movie, who's in it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, I guess just on the onset here, we watched this a lot. Like, I mean, you can say you can be hyperbolic and say a million times, but I mean
we watched it
We watched a lot. It was in our rotation of movies because we love baseball. We enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. As we've grown up, we've seen more layers come out of the movie. But I think it's one of the things as to where my first exposure to it and then later viewings as a kid, I guess I just didn't like the singing
interesting
portion. Yeah. Or mm-hmm. I really can't articulate a reason why. I just think it's one of those things to where I wasn't not put off to it, but I just
kind of bored. It was one of those
things where it kind of bored me a little bit.
Yeah.
Not even boring. It's just it's just one of those things to where I didn't like it as a kid at that time. Yeah. Maybe I couldn't articulate why.
Yeah.
But I kind of carried that over, and I was like, now I watch it, and I'm like, eh. Like it, I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
And I know some people can hear that and they can jump to the conclusion of, I know you don't like this. It's like, I never said I didn't like it. And maybe if I rewind back, I might have said I didn't like it. I don't dislike it. Yeah. It's actually it's a really cool part of the movie, and it's got a nice bookend at the end when they're at the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's very true to life. They would do stuff like that, but it's just one of those things where I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of it. It's not bad, and it definitely has its place in the movie.
It didn't affect you either way.
I'm indifferent towards it.
For that scene, they could have just done a montage or a couple of seconds showing them in the locker room, and I think it would have been dead space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they could have added comedy and you know, one-liners, because the movie is full of comments.
Yeah.
It's full of one-liners. Mm-hmm. It's full of big personalities and great actors and actresses that have huge personalities that you can tell they wrote these lines specifically for their deliveries.
Or at the very least, Penny Marshall, she didn't write it, but she took the script and catered it towards them. Mm-hmm.
Right. So they could have filled it with something that. I'm sure we would have enjoyed it. I don't mind it either way because as a woman who grew up in female athletics, especially softball, there are all kinds of softball chants and things like that in the dugout.
Yeah.
Even soccer, we always did. It wasn't just a cheer. We had a different cheer for halftime than we did at the beginning of the game and at the end of the game. And everything was, very detailed in music and chants and encouragement. And I do love, like you said, the bookend. It really brings it back. Mm-hmm. And I love that Hans Zimmer takes
it at the very end. He did. I forgot. It's such an incredible score. It's so unlikely.
Oh, it's one of my favorite scores. Well,
especially since I was only familiar with, because I had only ever seen the name Hans Zimmer on the Christopher Nolan movies.
Yeah.
Right.
But then
Lion King.
Yeah. And then I never even thought about who did the music. I loved the music, but I never thought about it as a kid. So when I got into my 20s, when I watched it for the first time in my 20s, and I was like, Hans Zimmer?
Yeah.
The really earnest dun dun guy who does the Christopher Nolan movies. Mm-hmm. But it's great.
It shows his depth as just a musician. He's just so incredibly talented.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, it really touches heartstrings for me on so many levels for so many reasons that I'm sure we'll get through as we go on. But the music in particular plays just a huge role for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nostalgic. I hear it and I really get choked up. I have goosebumps. You know, the music is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love the opening, Carole King's Now and Forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great song. I grew up singing that song with my parents on road trips and things like that. And so for it to be the opening of one of my favorite songs, a story about sisters. I have sisters and one in particular who, she and I were very close, just like you guys were growing up. Mm-hmm. Annie, my sister, and I had very close relationships that paralleled this movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so for you to have a really strong opening song by Carole King, you have a killer closing song from Madonna, This Used to Be My Playground, still a great song, and I love it. It's very nostalgic and it's powerful. Yeah. The lyrics are powerful. Mm-hmm. It ties in with the movie. And then to throw in somebody like Hans Zimmer, who's just loaded with talent, and for him to make it different. He could have made it like a Chris Nolan movie. He could have made it, like Gladiator, except he didn't.
Right.
And he catered it towards the message of this movie, the relationship, because that's what the whole movie is about. It's about relationship.
And
camaraderie, of course, and teamwork and baseball, yes, but it's really about the relationship
between
the sisters. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the heart of the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really powerful music.
And it's also a story of identity and self-confidence and redemption with Jimmy. And so there's a lot, it's a lot more than just a fun baseball movie.
And it's kind of the vehicle that's used and kind of the frame, the framing device is something that was incredibly important for not just baseball, but for women's sports in general. It's the all, like the all girls American baseball, professional baseball league.
Based on a true story. Love
Exactly. Yep.
And at that time, like, really revolutionary. Yeah. And I will say the movie portrays it as it started, like the baseball league started as a joke, and then through a lot of like promotional techniques and stuff, it got a lot of fans, which in reality, the league actually was successful from the jump.
Because
but,
a lot, there are a lot of territories that had teams that didn't have access to live baseball.
But you have to build in that conflict. It's a natural conflict, especially at that time. You got the men at war, and then the women have to come in, and they have to prove that they belong there.
Unfortunately, like, even though within the realm of the girls' baseball league, like the actual one, there, I mean, there still is, unfortunately, the ideal of women need to be in the kitchen. Women are, as John Lovett says, you'd be sort of a dolly. Like, so, you know, something to look at. And even in the newsreel footage, right when the league starts, Harry Shearer, as the new, the newsreel announcer, is like, he's putting at the beginning, he's putting these adjectives of like, and there's pretty Dottie Henson. And like, there's Betty Spaghetti, she enjoys knitting and cooking spaghetti. And there's Kit Keller, she's single, boys. And then Marla Hooch.
What a hitter.
If they don't have if they don't have looks, they don't get the spotlight. Because everybody
that was the draw.
Everybody
the
who
uniform.
Ran, exactly.
I can't slide in that.
There's no place to put my
cigarettes. There's no pockets for my cigarettes.
Right, and yet the women overcome it. They overcome all the laughter. You know, girls can't play ball. Look at me, I'm a ball player. And somebody making fun of them and putting them down. And, you know, there's no crying. I mean, all kinds of things. Having to take your son on the road with you. And being a single woman and going out dancing and being told that you're not allowed to because you're in the league. Or you can't smoke or you have to wear this. And yet they overcame it.
It's a shared experience.
And it didn't take 15 years. I mean, they jumped. They all jumped right into it, or at least that's how they portrayed in the movie. Which again, just kind of adds to the magic of how good this this film really is.
Yeah. And Jess, you mentioned camaraderie. Like, all they have is each other. It's like later when Doris is talking about her boyfriend. And she's like, "Well, I settled for him because I mean, like, I played sports, and the boys thought I was weird,
like a weird girl, strange girl,
and now." I'm here with all of us, and we're not weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's that mutual camaraderie.
I think we're all right.
Yeah. Like, I'm getting kind of chills because it's so powerful.
It's a special movie, and I'm just, we'll keep going on it because we have so much that, like, we're on a roll.
Yeah.
And with so much more
priming
to dig into.
Yeah.
We're excited.
So, exactly. So just some bits and bobs here. A League of Their Own was released July 1st, 1992. So we're just a little over a month out from its 30th anniversary. Directed by Penny Marshall, rest in peace. Starring Gina Davis as Dottie Henson, Tom Hanks as Jimmy Dugan, Madonna as Mae Marta Beto, Lori Petty as Kit Keller, Rosie O'Donnell as Doris Murphy, Megan Cavanaugh as Marla Hooch, Tracy Reiner as Betty Horn, Biddy Schramm as Evelyn Gardner, Ann Cusack as Shirley Baker, Ann Ramsey as Helen Haley, Freddie Simpson as Ellen Sue Gotlander, David Strathairn. He's one of those guys like, oh, I know that guy, as Ira Lowenstein, and Gary Marshall as Walter Harvey, with John Lovitz as Ernie Cappadino.
One of the best bit parts in the movie. Rance Howard as their dad.
David Lander as the radio broadcaster, Squiggy.
Harry Henson dropped the ball.
Harry Shearer as newsreel announcer, and Bill Pullman as Bob Henson.
Also, honorable mention. When I was a kid, my dad pointed this out. Tia Leone is in this movie. She's the first baseman for Racine. And she's got dark hair. You know, she's had blonde hair for, I mean, a couple decades now. And so people typically don't recognize that that's her because she's an unnamed actress in that movie. Her character, what I mean, doesn't have a name.
She is a non-speaking role, but she has a lot of screen time.
She sure does. At first at bat.
And at the beauty school, she's the one right before Kit.
Very nice.
She has a non-speaking role technically, but she catches it out first. She's just like, all right. And then she throws it back. So technically, it's non-speaking, but she says, all right, and like throws it back.
Honorable mention.
Yep.
Yeah. Very honorable mention. So Tia Leone.
Good call, yeah.
And Marissa Tomei, actually, while she was on set for My Cousin Vinny, she had Joe Pesci like throw the ball with and like help coach her on baseball and stuff like that. And she apparently worked really hard, but Penny Marshall was like, she's just not a ball player. She doesn't look like a ball player.
And that's important to notate is that all of the baseball is done by the actors and actresses in this
movie.
That was
one of the prerequisites. It's like,
we want women, from Gina Davis, but she took
a duck to water and became better than everybody else.
Yeah. You just have to applaud. You know, I think one of my favorite sequences of the movie is the tryout sequence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The footage is great, and it shows a variety of different women, different ages, all pursuing this dream and this passion and trying to make the tryouts. Of course, they're trying extra hard. They're trying to look good. But the footage itself is spectacular. The cinematography is done really, really well. Yep. The music, Hans, is outstanding and goes right along with the scene. Mm-hmm. And my mom and I, it's funny, when we were kids watching this, my mom and I would point out who we thought were actual ball players or who were actresses who were portraying ball players. And we would watch somebody like, I'm not so sure about that one.
Yeah,
she for sure is a ball player. Yeah. That one right there. Oh, did you see her? Yeah. Nah. Mm-hmm. So that was just a fun little tidbit that we did. But I grew up playing softball. My sisters played softball. My brother played baseball. Yeah. My dad played baseball. So we're a sports and
your brother
baseball
and your dad
family.
Played on the same team?
Beer league.
Peter Pan's got kids.
It's when your dad pulled a Billy Madison and he was in high school.
So your dad's on deck while Jordan's just like, hey, bud.
Pulled a Rodney Dangerfield back to school. Yeah. Triple Lindy.
Your dad does a triple Lindy on deck. It's like, dad, it doesn't work.
Your dad.
Exactly.
With all that background for you, Jess, obviously watching this movie as not only as an athlete, but as a female athlete from a house of athletes, and your mom is an athlete.
Yes. Yeah.
There was an importance, not only that it was an enjoyable movie, but there was an importance showing, you know, an all female led movie playing this predominantly, at least in the scope of 1940s America, predominantly male sport. That had to have been important, seeing that representation on screen.
It was, because there are so many athletic sports movies out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you get some really cool, big personality kids like for Sandlot, and you can see they're all playing, and that's their talent and their athleticism. But then there are other movies that I won't mention. I don't want to bash other movies, but there are other movies where you can just tell, that is not her. They have a double, they have a stand in.
Seabiscuit, you can say it.
Seabiscuit.
That horse
you know,
is not her.
Exactly. Remember the Titan, though.
Yeah. Hoosier Caddy.
Hoosiers.
Hoosiers. Overwritten. I'm just kidding. Hoosier's
no, fantastic
great.
Movie.
Hoosier's is great.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. But there are other movies where you can just tell that is not the actor or the actress playing that sport or filming that scene. They have somebody else, or if they do, it's really lousy. I am especially particular about soccer movies, because soccer was my predominant sport growing up. And so when I see somebody flub a soccer move on a movie, I'm like, you couldn't have gotten somebody better. But you have to applaud these athletes, especially Lori Petty. I thought she did an exceptional job.
Her and Rosie
were
the two best, apparently, and they had like hitting contests and stuff.
I read somewhere that Rosie O'Donnell really did throw the two baseballs, and that was really a trick that she could do. I'm not surprised. I mean, you can see Marla hitting that ball, and it, you know, they might have had somebody throw it out the window, but you can see her making the cut.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean,
she had to learn to hit from both sides of the plate.
That's right.
I wish my
mom can do that.
Oh, hell yeah. That's so valuable to be a switch
hitter.
Call her
up. Switch it. Yeah.
I do wish we would have seen more switch hitting from Marla in this movie.
I agree.
I mean, there's too much going on. I don't see, but I mean, like, I don't know, like, they make a pitching change and Jimmy's like, oh shit. And then I almost said Icebox. And then Dottie's like, left side. And then she goes to the other side and Jimmy's like, kind of like that kind of thing.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
Didn't know she could do that.
Like that. Yeah.
Well, even Madonna. Madonna, you know, I don't think had any baseball experience, or she did probably very little from what I've read, but I thought that she did a really decent job. I know that she wasn't thrilled about filming all those scenes, and yeah. You know,
she
I'm
was
sure
a complete diva.
Right, I heard she was crabby. At the same time, I think she did her job. She did what she got paid to do, and I also loved that they showcased her dancing talent in the bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they didn't have to do that, but they knew that they were working with a professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
and I love that scene. And that has nothing to do with the league or the movie, the music is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love that it shows the girls kind of cutting loose, and that's the camaraderie outside of the baseball diamond and the connection that they can have. And Kit gets to meet a guy and, you know, go fishing
Marla
for herself.
Meets Nelson.
Marla meets Nelson. I love.
I'm sick of the Nelson.
Well, and I, baby. Well,
it's fun. It's funny, but I love because from the first time we see Marla, which the baseball scenes were some of my favorite as a kid. But that scene where we first see Marla, and then when Jimmy is hitting off the pitching machine because of the sound the crack of the bat makes, I've always loved that as a kid.
Tom Hanks had a good swing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Tom Hanks.
He can do no wrong.
I love hearing... He loves talking about this movie because he was him... And because the tryouts were filmed in Wrigley Field. And it's Walter Harvey is an analog for Charles Wrigley. The guy who created the girls' professional league in real life. But it was at Wrigley Field, Harvey Field.
Yeah.
There was one time Tom Hanks tells a story to where... He was playing catch with Lori Petty at Wrigley Field, and he's like, you know, essentially says, like, take this all in, Lori. You may not get to do this. Is there anything better than this right now? And like, I just love hearing it's one of his favorite movies that he ever did. And it's so great hearing stories like that. But with Marla, I also love the scene at the juke joint. The Suds Bucket.
Yeah.
Roadhouse called Suds Bucket.
Yeah.
Because she's mid-puff.
No, we just gave her a dress.
Yeah.
And a lot of liquor.
A lot of liquor.
But what's great is we see from the first time John Lovitz sees Marla Hooch. I mean, it's mean, but it's also like John Lovitz is hilarious. But it's one of those things which where you laugh and you're like, oh, that's so mean. Just his reaction to seeing Marla. Yeah. But Marla is seen as she's a good ball player. And she's on the team because two of Ernie Caballito's biggest recruits wouldn't move unless you've got Marla on the team.
Dottie and Kit.
Yeah. But it's great to see that she's the first one to find love. She's the one who's getting the attention. Mm-hmm. She's the one getting all. And I
love that character progression. Yeah. She starts off kind of the butt of the joke, but, you know, turns out to be the strongest hitter on the team. You're going to squeeze bump with our best hitter. Yeah. She's recognized as the best hitter.
Yeah.
How about Marla Hooch? What a hitter. So she's famous and recognized for her baseball abilities and ends up meeting a guy, and we'll see you next season.
Yeah.
And at the very end, she's still involved, and that's such a cool progression for
so
a character.
Great. Mm-hmm.
You know, that could have been dropped. It could have been a one-time thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The butt of the joke at the very beginning that they take pretty girls and girls that are, you know, a little rough around the edges or whatever. And that could have been the end of it, but they, you know, I love that they progressed her character, and I love that they gave her more depth, and that she's likable, she's sweet, you know, they're all happy and excited for, I got a letter for Nelson.
Yeah.
They're all happy and excited. She's not put on the back burner, you know?
I love the, just, it's small camaraderie moments.
Yeah.
Like that, like, May is at the top on the balcony, she's like, you gotta let it, and she like is excitedly kind of comes, she's like, they all love each other.
Well, it's what's great is it's such a long cast to rattle off like that I just did, because pretty much all nine positions, all the girls, maybe seven of the nine positions, all the girls are showcased in some way. They all have
that's
their,
a good point.
Even Alice Gatzper, who like you hear the name and you see her every now and then. She's caught all six games.
Alice thinks it's bad luck to change her socks.
Exactly.
So we all have to suffer.
Come on, get out of here. Get.
Even she has a tidbit of personality to her character. We don't see Beverly again.
Like, but they have these character distinctions.
Yeah.
And it's so crafty the way that the writers and how Penny Marshall coordinated how
all of these women, there's an importance put on them somehow mm-hmm. because they're contributing to this very important
yeah.
thing
yeah.
that they're showcasing.
Yeah. It's this league is important because of you. You are all important mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously they're trying to make Dottie the Queen of Diamonds, mm-hmm. but no, not one player is bigger than like the whole, like it's the team camaraderie. Yeah. And it's the league.
Well, even Dottie yeah. is a reluctant hero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, because she is fine with just being, working on the farm, waiting for her husband to get back from war and having
married,
babies.
Having kids, and that's it. Yeah.
But she is, and so many times, one of the biggest sticking points that people point out to her is like, you love playing baseball. Don't deny your love for baseball just because you feel like you need to go be, you know,
mm-hmm.
domestic.
Yeah.
Which there's nothing wrong with what she wants to do, but they're like, while you can and you have this love inside of you
yeah.
to play this game, like, do it. Like, and enjoy it while you can. Yeah. You get to do something not a lot of other people get to do, especially participating mm-hmm. in this game. And even though Dottie says it's just a game, like it yeah. means nothing to me, it's like you're lying to
oh,
yourself.
Yeah. On the flip,
and,
yeah.
And so many times during the course of the movie, you see her like,
it's like an internal struggle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
You
see her like
she's conflicted,
enjoying herself, but yeah. then she pulls back.
Yeah, because she's the one when Ira Lowenstein,
yeah.
who is his progression during the movies, he really is seeing the value in these mm-hmm. women as baseball players.
Yeah.
Instead
it's his
of
job
dollies.
To promote the league.
Yeah. So now mm-hmm. he's seen instead of promoting them as eye candy, let's promote. I want this to stay alive because I see the value in what you can bring athletically, what you can yeah. bring with integrity, how important mm-hmm. important something like this is. So when there's the threat of the plug being pulled on the league, he's like, you know, let's dazzle these folks at Life Magazine. Mm-hmm. And Dottie's the first one to do something. So she obviously...
She cares.
She cares and has fun, but it's these parts of her that she feels like she needs to be like a wife yeah. and a mother and live on the farm for the rest of her life
mm-hmm.
that kind of butts heads with like the part of her that loves baseball and
yeah.
like, and it's that conflict that comes into play that makes her like a reluctant
yeah.
hero.
And on the flip side, Kit is in love with baseball and she's good, but she's in Dottie's shadow. And she desperately wants to be seen as her own person,
yeah.
her own player. Like it's this running narrative of like, well, you know, Dottie got you into the league. Like it's like she says, like, hey, you hear the way that Dad introduces us? Here's our daughter, Dottie. Here's
our other daughter, Dottie's sister.
And to Dottie's credit, she dismisses a lot of
yeah.
that mm-hmm. most of the time with
yeah.
Kit. Unless
Mitch Swaley likes you.
Mitch Swaley wants to have a buff dating pig.
Yeah, it's
an important step.
It's one of those things to where I understand like someone can tell you, can affirm you
yeah.
so much, but if you have it in your head
yeah.
that like you can't escape this or like
yeah.
you're not good enough and stuff
yeah.
like that, it's one of those things like she's kind of struggling with that. And the thing is, she's good.
Yeah.
But it's like instead of being seen as her own person and her own player, and May's like, is this going to upset your sister? And it's like, I don't care kind
mm-hmm.
of thing. And then, like, she's always getting the shit end of the stick
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Makes Kit very relatable.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people relate more with her than they do Dottie because they're only maybe one or two Dotties on a team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is a Kit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if they're not related or sisters or friends, you know, there are usually one or two standouts and then everybody else. And it doesn't mean that everybody else is terrible
mm-hmm.
in comparison. It just means they are not viewed in the same light
yeah.
as the standout, as the Queen of Diamonds, Dottie Hinson.
Yeah.
And so you really walk through this whole movie relating more with Kit.
Yeah.
And you feel sorry for her. You understand.
Mm-hmm.
And even when she, you know, gets Jimmy throws her over the shoulder when she
mm-hmm.
gets pulled from the game and he throws her in a cold shower and
mm-hmm.
you kind of think, oh, she's kind of acting like a brat, or I treated you like a pitcher. Pitcher lost her stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Kit comes back and she kind of pulls you into her corner by saying, you know, it's like we're at home. It's like you're here. If you're here, then
I'm not here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as long as Dottie is there, Kit may as well, you know, not
yeah.
even try because
yeah.
she's never going to make it. She's never going to be she's never going to do anything because
yeah.
Dottie is always
mm-hmm.
overshadowing her and overpowering her.
Yeah.
And she's just the queen bee.
Yeah.
And so that kind of puts you back in Kit's corner and makes you really feel and understand her hurt
mm-hmm.
because she is hurting for most of the movie mm-hmm. until she has her big moment at the end, mm-hmm. which I love that they redeem yeah. Kit's character. Mm-hmm. I love that after the game, she's the one signing autographs yeah. and she's smiling. Yep. She's happy. Yeah. You know, she is, she's in the groove. You're
gonna come back next year kind of thing.
That's yeah. right. Racing, you know, yeah. she's very excited,
yeah.
which is, it's awesome. And the whole sister relationship and, you know, I really relate to that, especially because my sister and I were very close. We're 18 months apart. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys understand being yeah. twins
yeah.
that you're compared a lot or you do a lot mm-hmm. of the same things or mm-hmm. play the same sports or you do the same activities at school. You mm-hmm. might have some of the same friends. And my sister Annie and I did. We moved around a lot. Yep. So our lives were constantly changing, and yet she was my constant mm-hmm. and vice versa.
Yeah.
So we really related to this movie in that we were on a lot of sports teams together mm-hmm. and it, not necessarily an overpowering of the other, but just a constant comparison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know, just the challenge of being related and being on the same team is just, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. It's hard to not lump yeah. the two of you together, even though you're two distinct yeah. individuals.
And what's important yeah. with people on teams or in whatever medium or in whatever platform that are like the Kits who feel like they're in somebody's shadow, it's important to know that you can be like Dottie and be like still trying to build, because Dottie builds Kit up. She mm-hmm. she never puts her down. I mean, every now and then she'll have moments where like,
I got you into this league, God damn it.
Or it's yeah, yeah something yeah. like that. Or it's like, I treated you like a pitcher who lost her yeah, stuff. Yeah. Like stuff like that. She'll get stern, but she's right. whenever Kit brings up this stuff, like these concerns she has, Dottie is like, she's like, come on, Kit, don't think that way. Like stuff yeah. like that. It's important to know that you can say that, but to still empathize with the people mm-hmm. who feel like they are in a shadow, feel like they may not feel they have growth because of this competition with somebody else. It's important to let them know their importance. So that's why right. that's why it was great at the end of the movie. And I feel, and I think I picked this up on this last viewing. Like I said at the beginning, the three of us have watched this 100 times.
Never
like,
together, like, though, which is
never,
interesting.
Never together. Yeah.
Which is crazy.
But on this latest watch, I picked up that I feel like Dottie doesn't tell Ellen Sue, who's pitching, I don't think she tells her to give Kit high ones so that she strikes her out. I think Dottie wants Kit to have her moment, and she knows Kit is capable of overcoming. So she's like, throw a high one. She can't resist. And Dottie knows that Kit is due mm-hmm. to hit one, and she knows. And
I've never approached it from that perspective.
I may
before.
Just be overthinking it, but I feel like it's something Dottie sees within Kit that she knows she can do, and she's been trying to get through to Kit this whole time that, like, you listen, you are amazing. You got here, and this is after the fact. She's like, you got here, you got on the team because yourself. Like, she sees this within Kit, and yeah. throughout the whole movie, she says, she's, you know, she's a great pitcher. She didn't pitch today because she pitched the day before. And like all these things to where finally she wants Kit to be able to do something to believe in herself. So that's why at the end when she's standing with Jimmy and Hans is
that's
playing.
That's a great shot.
Like, yep. and like
the crescendo.
You know, everybody yeah. disappointed except Dottie. Dottie's got like the yeah, like, kind of the grin on her face and like the proud look on her face looking at Kit being carried off by the team. So I feel like Dottie knew Kit would be able to hit one of those high ones and knew,
interesting, yeah.
like, again, I could be overthinking it, no, but that's just an added element, I feel like.
So are we kind of tap dancing around the whole question that people ask of this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Did Dottie drop the ball on purpose or did Kit just overpower her? That's the age old yeah. question that is associated with this yeah. movie. And so many people have different theories. And let me tell you, that's like what the majority of my notes that I have written uh-huh. down are about.
Yeah.
Oh,
that relationship, yeah. the whole ending, yeah. how it wraps up and how it ends. Did she drop it? Or did Kit just want it more?
Yeah. It's like
and beat her.
It's like Oliver Stone's JFK.
Yeah. I never thought of that because it's so funny. I always assumed, and this assumption kind of left me, a little bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah,
I always kind of grew up thinking that she did it on purpose, and like the bad taste in my mouth was always, yeah, but like, yeah, she did it for Kit, but if Kit were to find out, like, she would be so mad at Dottie, mm-hmm. like that she didn't like legitimately, yeah. because at the beginning when old Dottie, which the casting was great on because she looks like an older Gina Davis.
A lot of the women look like their younger selves. I thought
Kit was a really good older Kit.
Every time I see that, I'm like, who did the casting? That is excellent casting. Yeah. The old May.
Way to go, Penny.
Yeah, exactly. So, and Penny, I mean, applause to Penny Marshall for all like the detail and stuff. See, like when Jimmy's peeing, that's some pretty good peeing.
Yeah,
it's Penny Marshall in a stall, like with a hose and a bucket. Tom Hanks didn't know how long it was gonna go, but at the beginning, when old Dottie is talking to her grandson, she's talking to the older grandson. It's like, he's a lot smaller than you, so let him take a shot. And then it comes through, calls over the younger grandson. Kill him. Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
can I jump in?
Yeah.
So that's the first line of my notes is, you know, from the very, very opening of the movie.
Yeah.
Dottie is approaching her grandsons who are playing basketball, and one is older than the other. And so she kind of does this twofold. Hey, Jeffrey, now remember, no matter what happens, she says, your brother is littler than you are, so give him a chance to shoot. And that's kind of paralleling her story and that you've got to give your sister a chance too, or, you know, which I love that, Stephen, you've been coming to Dottie's defense this whole time, and I've actually really appreciated it. Mm-hmm. You've pointed out really good things about how she could have been snooty. Mm-hmm. She could have been a jerk. She could have said, you're right, I did get you in the lead, damn it. It's not really what she meant. That's not what she meant when she said that. But I love that you've come to her defense, because her heart for the whole thing is not so that she can outshine her baby sister. She didn't even want to go. I didn't want to be here. She didn't even want to go in the first place. Mm-hmm. So even from the very, very, very beginning of the movie, she's talking to the older grandson saying, hey, listen, go easy on your brother. But then she also turns to the younger grandson and says, kill him.
Kill him.
Get him. Go get him. And so that is that headbutt that you don't know.
Yeah.
Did she drop her or didn't she? And a lot of people, you know, you grow up thinking one thing, and then you get older and you watch it and you're like, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
And so Gina Davis says, you know, you'll never know, or I'll never tell.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of different theories that I've written down.
Please.
Yeah.
And I will say, before you get into your theories, as I was trying to rationalize my thought, I was like, this doesn't really support that much. Yeah. I just always grew up thinking that she did it on purpose.
Yeah.
But it would, that I'd rather now believe that Kit just found it in her to finally outshine her sisters. Of course. So on with the theories.
On with the chlorophyll.
On with the chlorophyll.
So, you know, there's so many different theories, and my theory has changed and come and gone. And the more I've spoken about it with, you know, my family members and things as we've grown older, my mind keeps kind of changing, but there are subtle hints. And every time I watch the movie, I get new hints about what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Dottie's face, like you pointed out, when she hits, it's not the face that she makes when she's standing next to Jimmy. It's she told Ellen Sue Delgunner, she told her to throw her high balls because she can't hit them and can't lay off of them, which means if we're going to close this thing, this is how you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that is her trying to clinch it, the win, the victory.
Yeah.
They're right there. And so she's saying, throw her high balls because she can't hit them.
That's where my head's at, too.
And then Kit does. She didn't throw her a strike and Kit hit it. She threw her a high one.
Dottie throws her mask up and she's surprised.
To the outfield. And so her face is surprised. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe she hit it. Yeah. That's right. For me, that tells me that maybe it's Kit's own merit. And the whole movie is, you know, Kit has this pent up, you know, grr in her heart and his motivation and anger, frustration, hurt, all of it. And it's just, it bubbles over, and especially it gets really hot during the World Series when Dottie returns.
Yeah.
You know, they have this face off when Kit is walking up to the mound and they eye each other and it's very tense.
Mm-hmm.
And so she looks over, and there's also a moment where it's the last at bat. Dottie looks in the dugout. Kit is having her baseball glove on her head, and she's hyperventilating. Yeah. She can't control her emotions, and she's sobbing and sobbing. And Dottie doesn't eye roll, but she kind of sighs and walks away. So you're really not sure yet if she, you know, if she did it on purpose or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she does tell Ellen Sue to throw the highball. So that tells me that she intended to seal it. And when Kit smokes it in the outfield and she is barreling around those bases, the third base coach tells her to stop. No, she's not stopping. And she keeps going. In my opinion, I think Kit overpowered her.
That's a really good point.
In my opinion. But then, like I said, there are all these other things where you're just not sure. So at the end of the movie, when Dottie and Kit meet each other, and this is their first conversation that they're having after the World Series is over, and Dottie kind of shruggingly says, no, you wanted it more than me, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she could have been snooty, but she's also not, no, Kit, congratulations, you wanted it more. She also wasn't very encouraging either, which tells me, no, you wanted it more than me. It's a very sisterly, borderline prideful way of saying, no, I mean, you earned it, you definitely wanted it more than me.
Dottie came back because she wanted to win.
That's right.
That's
She also she also said I'm no quitter.
Yeah. So she leaned into that competitive baseball player. I think Kit over my whole childhood is a lie.
Well, I think
I lied to myself.
And it's I mean it just to simplify it for simple minds like yours. Please. Yeah. I think it's just it's
the I'm glad you didn't forget about me. Simple minds.
Ah, yes.
Don't you forget about
You're
me.
You're alive and kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good song.
Yeah. But all in all, I mean, it's just showing Kit becoming her own person and Dottie wanting her to become her own person, because I feel like it also Dottie was getting frustrated because she said she has that moment where she's like, I'm tired for everything bad happening to you. You blame me when like I don't do anything to you except try to push you to become different, push you to become a better
person. You.
To include you. I want you to have this growth. So finally, when she gets traded and she's frustrated, she's finally like you're your own. So I think when you said, she kind of gives this look of when she sees Kit like freaking out after letting up the go-ahead runs and it was Dottie who did it. Like Dottie's kind of like looking at her and it seems like she's like, Kit, like grow up.
Yeah.
Like
I
want you to grow up.
Like, I
agree. Grow up.
I agree.
But like, so now it's like, and then also going back to like Dottie herself, because on the flip side, Dottie can be tied to Kit in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Like Kit can be tied to Dottie. Like when Dottie comes back and she's like, I'm no quitter. Like that's her like doing for her instead of like doing for Kit. Or making sure and Kit not appreciating it. It's this dichotomy and this back and forth that Jess, like you said right at the beginning, that this movie is about a relationship between sisters that uses this important moment for women and for women's sports as like a backdrop and a framing device. I mean, it gets equal like attention that this relationship is. But at the end of the day, it's the relationship between these two sisters. And that's why, you know, it's talked, we see, you know, we hear at the beginning when Dottie's daughter is like, well, you'll get to see your sister Kit. And she's like, oh, she'll probably be out with her husband, you know, on a boat or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like this was probably the crux and the turning point for Kit's life. Because she's now able to, like, she wants to stay in Racine. She wants to get jobs, all these girls. And she's like, well, you come back for Christmas, right? She's like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. But you're going to be here next year. She's trying to find ways to where she tries to quell Dottie by saying, well, we'll see each other again if you'll be here next year. Because Kit's not coming back. Because
she has to get it, like, she's got to get away from
Well,
Dottie.
I think she's made a, it's more, for me, I think she made a way for herself.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
So
absolutely.
She's not
intending
to return to the farm with Dottie and make 100 babies. Mm-hmm. You know, in the end of the movie, they said, Kit won't be there. She'll be traveling around with that husband. Meaning Kit did not go home to Oregon.
Yeah.
She made a new world and a new life for herself. And
it's not a spite thing.
Frank, you know, she got married and she continued with the league.
She may not see her, she may not see her sister. It may be like in every five or every 10 years they may write to one another, but it's one of the things to where their lives went in different directions, to where Dottie probably just sees Kit as like, I love her, but she like, she doesn't put an effort to keep up our relationship or whatever. And then we see the growth in that during the movie. So at the end we see them seeing each other again at the Baseball Hall of Fame, remembering like being
every
happy
time.
To see one
it gets
another
me every time
that whole scene. I mean, what helps is Hans's score.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's but, the music too.
It's that whole part, because there's so many payoffs to so many characters, so many callbacks to why things were important, which is great, because you have, you're giving so many traits to these characters and you're tying them all up either with, like, either with Dottie saying, you know, Helen Haley, and she's like, Dr. Haley, I'm a doctor, because the
they
whole,
cast all those women really well too, the older
Dottie, I'm married a plastic surgeon.
It's funny because they have these little moments that help tie up their character or reference their character, because Helen Haley is really prim and proper and she's really educated.
She wears Gatorade hats.
No, that's Ellen Sue Gottlander. But it's, you have these moments to where,
see my new red hat.
You have, you have, but you have the commitment to these characters to tie them up, and you see their connection back to what united all of them in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And you end the movie with Dottie and Kit reconnecting and really seeing the importance of their relationship, because there's something to be said for Kit showing up, because Dottie completely wrote her off to not show up. She's like, she might feel like she's, in not so many words, say she might feel like she's too good for it. You know, I don't even know why I'm doing it. So it's, that's a nice kind of conclusion to bookend what we see at the beginning, what we get in the middle, the nice creamy middle there, and then at the end at the Hall of Fame.
I like the word that you used when you said, you know, it's a payoff. That's a really good way to describe it. Especially since there's an, there's this underlying message in the movie about heart and passion for the game or for the sport. Dottie had all the talent, but her heart was not in it like Kit's heart. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't in it. I said it wasn't in it like Kit's heart was in it.
It wasn't a priority.
And Kit had talent, not as talented as her sister, but she still had talent, but she's the one that had the heart. And in the end, she's the one who overcame, she's the one who overpowered, and she's the one who claimed the victory, or at least for that first year, and then, you know, made a life of her own. But, you know, that's where Dottie and Jimmy also have this conflict. You know, Dottie's heart isn't in it, and Jimmy's the one that convinces her, you know, because you play like you love it. So he is assuming, and he is reminding her of her heart and her love for the game. But in the end, it wasn't enough. She was overpowered. Her talent can only go so far. It's a great message for not just, I don't want to say underdogs, but it's a great message for athletes who might not be the queen of diamonds, like the one or two players on the team, like we talked about earlier. They might not be that. But if you've got the heart and the drive and you practice and you... you put forth your best effort, and who knows what you can accomplish. And, because, you know, it's, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. And my dad always said, you know, you never know who's going to win. It depends on who shows up that day. So you could be the ranked number one ranked team playing the number five ranked team. But if the five shows up to play, they could overcome the number one ranked team because of their heart, their passion, their drive. They got nothing to lose. Lay it all out there. And that's kind of what Kit did.
It's part of the masterful Tom Hanks performance. It, when Dottie's like, it just got too hard. It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. It's the hard that makes it great. Like that kind of
great line.
And I think because Jimmy's clearly frustrated, because at this point we've seen a slow build of Jimmy being this surly drunk who talking about, like, he wishes he could have those 5 years back, but he, like, he got hurt because he's being stupid and he lost it to being a drunk. So it starts there, and then you see the slow progression, and then near the end, really, they have this connection on the bus. You really see their peers. So the frustration comes out near the end when she's about to leave with Bob, to where he's like, I wish I had half the talent you did, or I wish I didn't waste those 5 years. I wish I could have those times back. You don't, like, you don't understand the gift that you have. It's just, it's extra frustration because he sees her as a peer, he sees her talent, and he also sees that she's squandering an opportunity he wish he had.
It's, you use the term peer, and that's perfect, because as I was watching the movie, they're sitting in the dugout and he's teaching her how to use chew and stuff, and it's just them two ball players sitting next to, and I was like, I love that. Like, well, I love, because because the studio wanted there to be a romantic subplot with them, and Penny Marshall's like, no, that distracts from the whole movie. And plus, our hero wouldn't be much of a hero if she's cheating on her husband that's away at war. And plus, it would just distract.
It would ruin it for this movie. This movie is as close to a perfect movie as you're gonna get, and I think it would have ruined the movie, honestly.
Agreed. If you're ever curious about it, you can go on YouTube and you can search A League of Their Own deleted scene between Jimmy and Dottie.
There's one scene in particular
where he's hitting off the pitching machine, and she even says to him, "What is this machine?" And he says, "Oh, you know, it's to save the pitcher's arms and blah, blah, blah." And there's a lot of boring dialogue, which I'm so glad that they cut. Yeah. And it's trying to, they try and show this romantic connection, which is so far-fetched and unnecessary. Unfathomable. It's forced. They had chemistry, but not romantic chemistry.
It was literally two ball players.
That's right.
Yeah, and so two friends.
You know, it's interesting because they in this deleted scene they share a kiss. Jimmy kisses her, and it is just very hard to watch because you just don't buy it.
Yeah.
And but my brother was the one who sent me the clip and said, "Oh my gosh, did you see this?" And so I watched it this summer and I just thought, "Oh my gosh, no, I didn't."
I have no desire.
But he and I went back and forth about it, and he said it does explain why she left the way that she did. She didn't just leave because of Kit. She also left because of Jimmy and guilt, and she just wanted to get away. And it's like, no, that takes away from the narrative with the sisters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It takes away from the whole point of the story.
Yeah.
It's so unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it does make sense. And so when Jimmy meets Bob, and he says, "Oh, I'm a big fan of yours." "Oh, I'm a big fan of yours."
He
is not talking about anything outside of that. Was supposed to be referencing the romantic part, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
And so you don't know that if you've never seen that movie.
Yeah.
And so if you have never seen that deleted scene and you've only seen the original movie and you hear that, you just think that Jimmy is complimenting her because they're peers, because they're both ball players. And so when she takes his flask out of his hand on the bus and gives him a Coke, she's looking out for him because she's his peer, his buddy, a fellow ball player who's saying, "Hey, knock that off. It ruined your career. Have a Coke instead."
Yeah.
And that's how it should be. Exactly. But the deleted scene is very cringe, but it's interesting.
Penny Marshall's instincts on this movie are perfect.
Yeah. Yep.
Like she took it so seriously. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is the story I want to tell.
Yeah.
And everyone's they have to be ball players. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're actors, they have to play baseball and they got to look good. I'm not doing the typical, she needs a man for some sort of validation.
Yep.
Not doing that. Mm-hmm.
We're also not going to just hire actresses who are good at baseball, or we're going to hire actresses and then have stand-ins. Everything was done completely purposefully and perfectly.
Except Gina Davis can do the splits, but she can't slide into the splits, so they got to double for that. But other than that,
you know what? Whatever. I give her the credit. Can you do the splits, Matt?
I cannot.
She can still do the splits.
Gina Davis can do the splits.
Who can?
Ayo.
Is the name of my autobiography is Gina Davis Can Do the Splits.
There you go.
But before you started talking about Jimmy, I was going to try and find a way to segue into Jimmy, so I'm glad you started talking about Jimmy.
Yeah,
I love his growth and progression. It's Tom Hanks, so even when he's an asshole, you still like him because it's Tom Hanks.
I'm not because of you. His inflection.
Because he's cracking wise with Mr. Harvey and stuff like that, and he gets serious and earnest. It's like, "Mr. Harvey, I hit 487 homers for your club.
Three in the World Series.
Two in game four alone. You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like,
he just would have laid off the booze.
Yeah. And he just plays, he's a jerk, but also he's a sympathetic, like, he destroyed himself before his time.
Right. I feel like Kit, it kind of gave us an opportunity to see his hurt and his pain. That's why he was an asshole. That's why he, did the things that he did and didn't care initially. Mm-hmm. And he was forced to take this job in women's baseball. Mm-hmm. That's such a step down for a major leaguer like the big Jimmy Dugan.
That's right. Yeah.
But in the end, he's very invested and whatnot. But
I love that flip. Actually, I just thought I want to kind of consult with you guys because I'm trying to figure out. For me, I think that flip happened in the Marla Hooch at bat when he's like, "What are you stupid? You're gonna squeeze
bunt with our best hitter."
To where it's just, and plus that shot of both of them doing the signs and stuff.
Hey, who's the coach here?
I am.
Well, you don't act like a big lush. Like that, and then he's like, "Ah, see, I still don't think you're ball players." Like that. Right. Not
not that necessarily, but his active involvement. Mm-hmm. And then I love his progression when he starts referring to them by name, even when it's like, all right, tall girl, Beverly. All right, Beverly. Like,
good, good.
There's an investment. Mm-hmm. And then when he's talking to them like ball players, mm-hmm. like, I mean, obviously the most famous scene, one of the most famous scenes in movie history, mm-hmm. just yes. no crying in baseball.
Yeah.
I was sitting there and I was like, he's being really mean, but also in a way, this is kind of a sign of respect because he's treating her like a male ball player.
Before he yeah. goes up to Evelyn,
the way he wags his finger,
But then, like, when he before he goes up to Evelyn, he points at one of the players coming in. He's like,
"Shake it off. That, we'll get it back." Yeah.
Well, he points the first time.
Yeah.
He points at a player coming in, points and gives a thumbs up as if to say, like, "Good job." Yeah.
No, that's what I was referring to. They're all coming in because they tied the game. And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "We'll get it back. We'll mm-hmm. get it back." And then it's like, Evelyn.
What team do you play for?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a peach.
Yeah.
We won't quote the whole thing. I can't. Yeah. We can, but we won't.
Yeah.
Well,
we did before we started, so we got it out of our system.
Right. Of all the baseball movies, outside of You're Killing Me Smalls, it's probably the most quoted line.
That, I'd say
No Crying in Baseball.
I'd say top three or four, No Crying in Baseball.
Those two switch spots often,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. You're Killing Me Smalls, If You Build It, They Will Come.
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
I did it all.
You used to be Mel Clark.
I love Angels in the Outfield.
Used to be Mel Clark.
It does start at one and you're a jackass.
That whole scene, really.
Run home.
Yeah. Run home. No, never played any ball, sir.
Yeah, we're going back to work on fundamentals. Like, and just
anything from Angels in the Outfield. Kids, he's an angel. Really.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
It is.
I love that movie.
We're going to talk about that one together.
Yeah.
What?
Didn't we do Angels in the Outfield again?
We did music scores. And I mentioned Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah. That's right.
Feels like we talked about that movie because we love that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think we're going to be doing that with Dave Little. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah. But you're right. There are other little subtle ways mm-hmm. where it's not just, you know, his engagement starts. He starts to actually manage. He still has kind of a hard edge to it. But then there are those moments to when he starts taking the girl seriously and he starts to genuinely care. Yeah. Like you mentioned when he offers Dottie the chew. One of the things that stuck out to me is this is just kind of a more noticeable moment of her recognizing that she's a ball player. He's like, "Law, ball players use it."
Yeah.
He's recognizing she's a ball player.
It's like, "You're a ball player."
But also, like when he comes in and he's more like energetic and like vibing well with the girls.
Yeah,
unfortunately it's right before Betty finds out that her husband died. But it's like that's that lump 3 feet above our ass, right, Jimmy?
Yeah. Somewhere prominent than others, Doris.
He's got that rat tat, he's got that repartee.
Yeah. When he smacks Miss Cutlinger in the butt.
Cuthbert.
It's like, "You stick of pancakes, you."
I like those moments because then it's still balanced after that with him being like, "Come on, catch a guy too." Like, it's him yelling and ranting and raving.
Is that English? I know that's a different part. Yeah.
But when he goes, when he gives Betty the telegram, he's apprehensive to like hug her. Like he cares about these girls, and he goes up, hugs her. And then also, right after they lose the World Series, like Doris is sitting close to where the entrance is from the dugout to the clubhouse. And she's like sniffing sobbing, and like Jimmy just like grabs her leg and like shakes her leg and he's like, "Come on." And like, it's a nice moment to where he genuinely cares. And then it's all at the end when he comes back and he's like, "Harvey offered me a job up in Wichita and, mm-hmm. and Dottie's like, "Oh, AAA." And he's like, "I didn't take it." She's like, "Why?" And he's like, I already have a job.
I love it. Like,
well, I think that's the underlying heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jimmy had the heart for the game, for athletics, et cetera. And so you asked when the transition was. And when you pointed out that whole, you know, "You're going to squeeze bunt with our best hitter."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he and Dottie go head-to-head with doing different signals for Marla. And I think Jimmy can't help himself because he's like, "What are you doing? No.
Yeah.
He's had how many years of baseball experience? Yeah. And he mm-hmm. knows, if you've got, you know, bases loaded or you're down by one or whatever it was. Yeah. I think they were down by one.
Mm-hmm.
why would you waste Marla Hooch on a squeezed bunt when it may or may not work? He can't help himself. He's got to stand up and say, no, excuse me, sit down, batter, and take control. Yeah. And that's what he does. And so as much as he is all right, God knows we have a game.
Yeah.
And when they're in, but at the end, he comes back and he does it, you know?
He crosses himself. And I love the way he points.
Or he does the prayer before the last game in the locker room. And half of it is filled with humor, which is very hilarious, by the way. But it's also, Mayor Balls be plentiful. And that's all that he knows how.
These are good girls, Lord.
I love that.
Right. That is his kind of winning characteristic, is that he's got the heart in the game in the same way that Kit does. He's invested because he loves the game. So he can't help but want to help these players, even if it's, you know, you're not, like I said, you're not ball players.
So is that your transition point too, kind of? Like, to where you feel like he started, like he's not nice, but he's starting to take more ownership. Yes, but I feel like it's accidental. Ownership.
Like he can't help himself.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I feel the same way because I coach six sports. Yeah. And so when I'm watching my own son play baseball and the coach is not helping him, or, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally can't help myself. Can I go in there? Mm-hmm. I have a hard time resisting the urge to, like, hey, kiddo, choke up on your bat.
Yeah, yeah.
Coach isn't telling you, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
That's the same kind of pull that Jimmy Dugan had.
Yeah.
So if that's the transition, I think that's just the start, even if it's accidental.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's the start.
Yeah. That, and that's what I'm kind of getting at is that he's at least showing. He's showing some sort of involvement.
He's engaged now.
It's not like, it's not the first time he's actively respecting them as ball players or actively deciding to make. But yeah, I always kind of see that moment as he's now getting involved. I can't just sit on my ass now.
Yeah.
Like I have to coach.
He's
the
now
team.
At the edge of the dugout, not sitting behind everybody else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
we got to talk about Steelwell Angel real quick.
So there are these moments. There are, I think we hit upon some of the more crucial moments of the movie.
It's so perfect.
It is a special movie, and it's a special movie when you can watch it 100 times as a kid or watch it 100 and then watch it again. And you see more things, like slice of life things, and you see the depth in it. I mean, you don't get a lot of movies like that. And this is a movie that is so tight and so well done. Yeah. And it doesn't leave a lot to be desired because it delivers. Even montages use as storytelling devices, they use super well because there's like four, maybe five big montages, and they're all spaced out really well because you get one to where it's at the beginning, given the idea of what Walter Harvey's trying to do, and then it gets kind of the radio report of kind of the general public thinks it's a joke and the adverse effects of it. And then you get the newsreel where it's talking about, okay, if we can't change it, here's what we're going to accept about it. These girls are dollies. We know they should be in a kitchen, but here's all these superlatives, like pretty and cute. No, that here's how you see them. And then you get the growth.
Catch a foul ball and you get a kiss.
Then you get all the promotional stuff. You get the montage of all the promotional stuff showing the popularity of the game, closing with right before that montage ends. It's one of my favorite spots, and it's my favorite part of Zimmer's score, where it's like dun 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 dun, like the
fireworks.
There's that, and then when Ira Lowenstein is walking up and down the walkways in the stadium and it's packed and it's like dun 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 dun. Like, see that there's merit to what these women are doing. And Ira, who's been trying to who's keeping Walter from like shutting it down because the boys are coming back home, he's seen, I can make this work. We can make this work. And then finally, the World Series montages are great in adding the, you know, using the newspaper clippings and the intermittent shots of the game going on. Really kind of quick, brief ways of showing how intense this matchup is and really showing the gravity of what's going on.
Drama.
Yeah, that at the end of the day, these aren't just pretty girls playing baseball who this whole time they've taken themselves seriously, which is great. It
shows in the skirt, baby.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows that this is going to be a firefight right up until the very end because they take themselves so seriously that neither one of them is giving the other one an inch. So at the end of it, it's showing the importance of showcasing this, is showing the importance it was to these girls to really show themselves as athletes. Yeah. And it was a, I tried to refrain from using a dog fight, but like it was a prize fight. It was like a back and fight, back and forth prize fight that really showed they took themselves seriously, even if nobody else did.
Right. Yeah. There isn't really a moment that I don't love about this film. I love, even, you know, as a kid, the slower parts of the movie for me growing up were the ending ones where they're kind of walking through the Hall of Fame. They're just a little more slow.
Yeah,
but even then, I really appreciated that they brought Stillwell back and that he was so sincerely in love with his mother. God. That
that breaks me every time.
It's so endearing. Yeah. He loved her and she loved him, and he's there to support her. And the way that he lovingly looks at the big portrait of her, you know, on the wall. The fact that they brought all the women back, and that so many of them look like the younger actresses that they're portraying. I even love, you know, they had all these pictures, and I thought, oh, we're going to walk through the Baseball Hall of Fame and look at pictures of women that we don't know or that weren't from the movie. But they show, you know, pictures of May and Doris standing there.
Yeah.
And then Dottie rounds a corner, and there's a picture that we've never seen. We have not seen that moment of her and Kit standing there. We haven't seen that. They were, you know, there was so much animosity. They were so pitted against each other the whole movie. But yet somebody at some point in the season took a still shot of them standing next to each other, pitcher and catcher. And I thought, that's smart. Cool. The work was so magical.
So well thought out.
Oh, absolutely.
The attention to detail like that. Because like you said, they could have easily just gone to the actual exhibit, which opened around that time.
Right.
But they took the time to make the big cardboard cutout of Evelyn that Steele was looking at of his mom. They make an actual, like,
blown up
picture of Jimmy Dugan.
And Kit. And is that your grandma?
Yeah. They took the time and effort to make this stuff tie into the movie itself, that it keeps you in that world. It doesn't, you don't have to suspend your disbelief too much. And it's such, like, I get super emotional at several points in the movie, but like, mainly during the entire ending because just the gravity and the importance of the story and that the movie is telling and just how pivotal this was, just this women's baseball league and giving a lot of women this feeling of belonging in a sport they love, or just in sports in general, belonging or acceptance. And they all just, all these women, no matter if they played on any of the four or five different teams, they all had this unity in this important, you know, in real life, this important 9 years of sports history and this story's being told.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask you guys, I'd love to hear, what was, if you could pinpoint the most emotional moment of the movie for you?
Easily.
There are several, but what's the most emotional
For me, moment? It is... It's so crazy that you bring this up, because I was going to segue into something similar. So you guys are on it. You don't need me. But
drinking mic's hard.
It's all out. Okay. Well, that's a little bit left. I'll do it later. Anyway.
I'm all wet.
I'm all wet. So we mentioned Steelwell Angel, and Evelyn, the woman who gets yelled at for crying in baseball. She's got her young son who she asked if she can bring on road trips because her husband's too busy reading the wanted ads and said to just shut up about it. Yeah. But it's a real winner. Steelwell, when we're in that time that they're all young and they're in the 40s, he's a rambunctious little boy.
Right.
He's a little devil. It's like, someone get that kid away. Stillwell! Someone get that kid away from the
tape. Stillwell!
Yeah, he's eating a bunch of chocolate. He's running up on the, he's covering the eyes of the bus driver. He's a little runt. Yeah. And you hate him. You're gonna lose. And I mean, Jimmy pegs him in the face with a baseball glove.
He's genius.
Got him.
Genius.
And so the whole time
you're
like, I hate this kid. And then when you get to the Hall of Fame, he's all grown up, and he's so sincere. He, like you said, Jess, he's just so genuinely, He loved his mom. Mm-hmm. He's so happy to be there.
Yeah.
She didn't recognize him at first, and he's like, "Hi, Dottie." And she's kind of looking at him confused, and he's like, "You're gonna." She's like, "Stillwell Angel."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Oh my God." She says, "Where's your mom?"
Yeah.
And mom he's died. Like, he's like, "Mom died." The kind of thing. She's like, "Oh, it's a wonderful lady. Hell of a ball player." Mm-hmm. That gets me. And then when he's looking at the picture of his mom, just gazing at her with admiration. And it's a small thing, but when someone says, "Stillwell Angel, turn around for a picture," they're smile. Like super joy, they're like super happy and joyous. And like he misses his mom. Mm-hmm. And he like turns around kind of half-heartedly, kind of mm-hmm. smiles, and then just goes back to this look. He just goes back to looking at this picture of his mm-hmm. mom. It's just the look on his face is just this unbelievable, like he misses her.
And he's proud of her.
He's proud you know, of her. And he looked up to her.
As much as we laugh about Evelyn and she can't hit the cutoff and,
she's you know, a damn fine ball
she
player.
She was a ball player and her husband was sitting at home looking at the want ads and she made something of herself and she went and played, you know, women's baseball in a professional league and brought along her son and parented him in the process. I think he's looking up admiring her, so he's admirable, but he's also, you know, like proud of her accomplishments and like looking at her just so full of appreciation and gratitude.
It's small. It's his delivery when he says "Mom died," and then like his nonverbal. It's so genuine. Like it doesn't feel like acting.
I agree.
Like it feels like someone who loved their mother dearly, lost her recently. Like, and is in such awe of everything she's accomplished.
Yeah.
I agree.
And he misses her.
Mm-hmm.
And that breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the look on his face is just, I miss my mom. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Turns around, kind of half-heartedly smiles for the picture and just goes back like, I miss you, mom. That kills me. And so that definitely makes me the most emotional. Yeah.
I think, and I don't know how Pavlovian it is because The story behind me getting emotional because of the movie is from the ages of like 11 until we were about 14 or 15, I lost count how many times we watched the movie. I loved it. I enjoyed it, but no emotional reaction. And then randomly we had like a free trial of the movie channels at our house. And I was like 16 and I came up in the morning before school and our mom had it on. And I just, like, a movie I'd seen so many times before, just out of nowhere, I started getting emotional when Dottie and Kit see each other at the Baseball Hall of Fame. And ever since then, I've just gotten more and more, like, increasingly, like, emotional, kind of blubbery over it, which I don't know. And I've added depth to the reason why I get emotional. And I think I've kind of touched on it already. One part I will say that doesn't get me as emotional as the Dottie Kit reunion, but still gets me emotional to where I like start kind of like getting choked up is when Marla's leaving her dad.
Yeah.
And like,
they hit you early.
Yeah. And Marla, cause you can tell she's this frightened, like scared girl who all she knows she's good at is like sports and she takes care of her dad and she's like, she's going to miss him. And like when the moment Hans Zimmer score again, like kind of that carrying, as like the train's going away.
He like gestures hitting, he's like,
"I love you." And then he like, he like pretends to like swing cause he believes in her and he like that relationship like brings a tear to my eye. That's where the first moment I get really choked up. But I mean, without fail, whenever Dottie and Kit see each other, it's so many points during that. I mean, like I said, that whole 10 minutes at the end, pretty much the whole time, it's just swelling up just the emotion.
Cause you know what's coming and you're ready for
because
it.
Of that. And because just the gravity and the weight and like Mr. Lowenstein, you kept the league alive for so many years. You do it.
Yeah.
And like, it's just, I get goosebumps on that because of just how the importance of this, no matter what any of these women did, the importance that they all did this together and they're being recognized for it. And I get emotional because it was real life.
Yeah.
That actually happened. It would have been a beautiful story if it were just a story,
yeah,
but it actually happened. And it was a very real emotion, a very real moment. to why I think this is such an important movie, not just a sports movie, but an important movie for like empowerment and for not just, you know, especially for women to see and little girls to see that this is something that, although it's set in a movie, it's a real story. And it's important to know that despite what people think of your abilities, believe in yourself to do something that you love and have passion, fire for it, and do it to the best of your ability for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, playing with a team and all that. But it's just important to show that you can accomplish things no matter what parameters people will set for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's yours?
Oh, man. Outside of the Dining Kid reunion and the hug, because that gets me because of my relationship with my sisters. And because we share things that nobody else knows, just like I'm sure you do as brothers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, inside things that, you know, we overcame together and, mm-hmm, and whatnot. Yeah. But I think the moment right after Hansen dropped the ball and everybody's going back into the dugout, but Kit is out there jumping in front of the crowd and they're all cheering for Kit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are finally recognizing her heart, her talent, her drive, and she is celebrating with them. Mm-hmm. It's not an attention thing as much as it's an excitement thing. It's a joy filled thing. Mm-hmm. And she finally won.
She gets the spotlight.
And she gets the spotlight. And it, you know, but it's not even the spotlight. I know what you mean by but it's, but it's like we say the spotlight, but it's really not the spotlight. I think it's just her like achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, her proving herself as a good ball player.
Validation.
As good as my sister Dottie, the queen of diamonds that you all have been standing on your feet and praising all season. Mm-hmm. Now she's, and when the music, of course, just is so powerful and booming, but she is raising her arm in the air and jumping in the air and they're all there for her. It's such a powerful moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's also a moment, like I brought it up before, where they're at the Hall of Fame and Dottie rounds the corner and she sees this picture. And I thought, man, there are so many pictures or so many moments of my sisters and I as kids. And that just brings back so many things. Mm-hmm. Moments where, you know, Annie and I, my sister, she's a year and a half younger than I. We played on the same soccer team in high school, you know. Yeah. And in one of our varsity games, she had a free kick right outside the 25-yard line, and she and I just kind of made eye contact with each other, and I kind of gave her a nod is what I did, and I kind of smiled, and she kind of smiled at me and kind of nodded like, okay, I know what you want. And I kind of, you know, moved my eyes to the left and told her non-verbally that that's where I want the ball. Mm-hmm. And so she had a free kick from outside the 25, and she did this perfect chip that just went right to where, you know, I wanted it to go. And I headbutted it in. It went over the top of the goalkeeper's hands. And she and I always remember that. But we have 100 of those moments.
Yeah.
100 of all the sports that we've ever played. And so when Dottie rounds the corner and sees that, it always makes me think of my sister. Mm-hmm. And at the very, very, very end, when the "This Used to Be My Playground" song by Madonna is playing, which is all, I love that song, and I think the lyrics are really cool.
Right.
They're showing footage of the older women who are playing baseball, which are the members.
The ones.
That's an awesome moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But they also show pictures of the cast, and then they show pictures of them. There's one shot in particular. It's a black and white photo of these women baseball players, maybe 8 or 10 of them, sitting on a fence or on the dugout.
Yeah.
And they're all, it's a very candid moment. And I thought, do you know, I have so many pictures of my teammates and I doing exactly this, spitting sunflower seeds in the dugout, or, you know, sipping on water on the soccer bench or whatever. And I just think, oh my gosh, it just, this whole movie reminds me of my childhood of growing up with good music and good friends and playing with my sisters. And it makes me very emotional and nostalgic and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that Kit got her moment. That's probably my pinpointed moment for me.
And that's, and I love that that's where we're kind of going to end here. It's special because it's applicable to so many parts of our lives because of the relatability in a lot of ways. And we've said it numerous times throughout here, how relatable Kit is, or even how relatable just looking at a picture in a montage or in a moment to where you're like, yep, that reminds me of me and my friends, me and my teammates. And it's just, it's such a wonderful movie that I will never not watch ever. Like, I will always watch this movie. And I'm sure on later viewings now, I will still find things that are great about it and the layers. And that's just a sign of a great movie.
Yeah.
Jess, thank you so much for being on. This was an excellent discussion.
It's one of those things where if it were just Steven and I, we could have had a good discussion.
Yeah, it would have been
based on the movie as a movie, and it would have been great. We would have had a sprinkle in some personal experience. But to have you here with that, like what you just said, like there are pictures that remind you of you on your girls' teams. Like there, it's a different perspective. And it's a deeper connection that the two of us wouldn't have been able to touch on. So we just, your, and not just your input, but your friendship is invaluable.
Yeah.
So we want to thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
It's always a pleasure hanging with you both.
Ah, same. Thank you.
Same.
The pleasure's all mine.
Yeah. Pleasure's all Matt's. anyway, no, thank you very much, Jess. Again, thank you. And thank you all for listening. Until the next time.
Ah, shit. What was the line? Oh, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.